everybody. Please help support the show. We have some links to get yourself some Foria CBD wellness stuff where we get a kickback in the show notes. We also have some Lust Cinema links, same thing. I am offering my unblocked course on moving through creative blocks with a self-consent practice that starts on May 15th. I love teaching that class. It's probably my favorite class. It's pretty cool to watch artists find each other and talk about their imposter syndrome and their inner critics and kind of watch each other be like, wait, but you're so talented. Why do you feel that way? Oh, maybe I can turn that around on myself and notice that I also am really talented and I still have imposter syndrome. Also, I am now on Substack. I am writing more in depth there than what you see on Instagram, and I'm gonna be doing less on Instagram and more on Substack. So please do find me there. Hi, welcome back. This is Share the Load, and I'm talking to my friend, Charlie James. And you can tell people who you are.
Hi, I'm Charlie James. I'm first and foremost Mia's friend. And then also sometimes I do comedy when I'm not hanging out with Mia. That becomes more and more true, actually, as time goes on. I really
but
am.
But sometimes,
like,
sometimes you do comedy while I'm there.
Yes, yes, and that is like a good crossover event where I get to be both things at the same time.
Yeah, I love that. It's true. We like very quickly started hanging out a lot because we go to Torah study with Aaron, who was on the show last week, and then we go to temple, and then we do all kinds of other Jewish stuff.
Yeah.
Do we do any
and
stuff
sometimes
that's
none.
Not Jewish stuff?
When I do comedy shows, it's not that Jewish, but I saw a Jewish play of yours, and in that way, it
that's
was
right. Yeah. That's yeah. right. It wasn't a Jewish play, but it was part of a Jewish playwrights festival. So yeah, Jewish. Maybe we should try to do some not Jewish stuff.
We should just go to like the beach. That is the least Jewish place, I feel.
I was gonna say I don't beach. I don't beach.
Yeah, me neither. I really don't like it.
Have you seen me?
We're too pale.
Oh.
Yeah.
I don't like the sun. I don't like sunscreen. I don't like sand. I don't like cold water. I don't like the majority of people who go to the beach. Like, it's just, it's not for me. It's not for me.
I got to have a lot of sunscreen if you're going to get me to the beach.
I hate how slimy sunscreen is.
Yeah. And if it's not slimy, it's chalky. And that's like even worse.
That's right. Yeah. A lot of people listening to this are like, you're autistic. And I'm like, you're probably right. I get told that a lot.
Every day I find out a new autism symptom that I have. And I'm like, okay.
Okay. If you say so. I think that's probably true. I got told that yesterday because I was like very literally interpreting a text message.
This happened to me. Someone said something was going to take 6 hours. I kind of told you about this.
Oh, yeah.
And I was like, 6 hours from the time that we start is 100% what they mean.
Right.
And they were like, no, the process is 6 hours. And I was like, well, okay.
But that's not helpful because what I'm hearing when you say it's going to be 6 hours is that that's how much time I need to block off from my day to do this.
Not the vibe is 6 hours and we'll see what actually happens. I'm hearing like at the 6 hour mark, I am free to go home.
I'm done. That's right.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm concerned for you in the rest of that tattoo experience. I hope that's okay to say.
Me too.
But, TBD, I'm sure it'll look really good.
Thank you so much. I really hope.
I really hope. And if it doesn't, you can't see it.
That's the best. The back half of my body, I don't know about you, a very few tattoos in the back because I'm not really looking back there.
I know. I have a tattoo from someone who I'm no longer friends with. And I'm like, I so wish that I had asked you to put this on the back of my leg.
Yeah.
And not the front of my leg. Cause now I see it all the time.
I know.
It's a silly cartoon dog holding a flower, wearing a shirt that says, I love life. And every time I look at it, I'm a little bit like, fuck you, guy.
Yep. Yeah, on a bad day, I bet that's the worst tattoo to look down on.
Yeah, because I'm like, this friend just was like, I don't want to be friends with you anymore. And I was like, whoa, that's okay.
I got a matching tattoo with my best friend around 2 months before we like stopped being friends altogether.
Oh no.
Yeah. Yeah. We'd been planning it for like a year. And oh man. It just, even at the time we got it already, there were some issues happening. And I was like, I don't know what's going to happen. And I had to be like, and also it was his first tattoo. So I had to be like, you have to promise me that if tomorrow you and I hate each other's guts, you are still okay with getting this tattoo today. Like I need, because like I have a ton, I'm going to be fine.
Right.
You don't have any other tattoos. What is this? Yeah.
Whoa.
All the time I have stress dreams that he gets it removed and doesn't tell me. And I'm walking around with a solo friendship tattoo.
Solo friend tattoo. That's so sad. That's so sad.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure it's cool.
It's pretty cute. It's pretty cute. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. So let's see. We don't really have a plan.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about like stuff that you and I talk about a lot. And I don't know. What do you think we talk about a lot?
Art. Here's what I think we talk about. Yeah. Art, theater of some kind, comedy and non.
Mm.
Being Jewish / gripes with Judaism. What we eat. We talk a lot about what we eat.
You and I,
yeah. Yeah.
Well, okay, so I have a question. When you look at like your own body of work, like a creative body of work, what are the themes that you notice that you like come back to again and again and again?
Oh man. I would say the biggest one for me is like feeling like an alien or an outsider in some way and trying to get comfortable with that rather than rejecting that or having to become like fully ingrained to feel good. So that's like the biggest thing for me. I think that's just some only child.
I mean, it sounds like gender stuff.
Absolutely. It's like gender. It's like really most aspects of my life. I'm like, I came here in a little spaceship and now I'm here and I'm hanging out. I'm here to stay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I live here now. So I'm going to make the best of it.
Totally.
Yeah.
And like, I'm still going to be a space alien and I'm going to eat goo and my friends are going to have to be cool with that. But like, okay. I'm going to try whatever you guys eat on your planet and it'll be fine.
Well, you might end up with severe indigestion.
Yeah. Often.
Very likely. I've rejected most human food. I really mostly have to eat whatever alien food is okay with my tummy.
Yeah. You have a very specific alien, I was going to say, biosphere, and that's not really. I've been thinking a lot about the dome in Las Vegas, the sphere in Las Vegas, the dome in Las Vegas. I'm just like, what if that was an ecosystem and they had like plants and animals in there. Ooh. And stuff.
Isn't that kind of like what the Simpsons movie was about? Don't they build a dome? Never mind.
And there's like a Mars experiment like that where they locked people up for like a year and a half in this like Mars simulator.
Whoa.
Yeah. Just to see if they would all get along. And they did end up having sex with each other, which I think is,
well,
like,
that's not surprising. I mean, yeah. it's like a short, it probably like takes, I mean, I don't know. The line between like, you know, going from like sex to murder, I feel like is like a really quick tip. Is where my mind goes. Like, I'm like, once you're fucking, you probably also are like ready to murder somebody.
Yeah.
In a Lord of the Flies simulation.
Totally. Your feelings are all the way there.
Right.
I'm having sex and I'm ready to kill.
And I'm ready to kill. That's, yeah. Makes sense to me. The alien thing is funny. I feel like I hear so many trans people use the alien, like feeling like an alien. And I
totally,
I asked someone I'm dating recently, and I still have to ask how much is okay for me to ever share about our life together, but I feel like this is okay. I was like, I'm curious about how you see me. And he was like, you know, trying to find, he said some really cute shit, but I was like, am I like a little alien, you know, wibbly wobbly, like outer space. And I don't think that was how he sees me, but that was what I was like, you must see me like an alien.
Completely. Completely. And it's never that other people see us that way. It's always an internal, I think I just spent so much time growing up with like girls and women. And I always was like, and again, it's like crazy that I'm here right now. And you guys, I'm just like,
and you don't
feel like I'm tagging along.
Right. Or like my cosplay must be very convincing.
Yes. Yes. I mean, it felt like doing drag all the time. And to them, it's like, oh no, it's just, you're just like one of the girls. And I'm like, well, that's nuts, because I know that underneath my human skin is like the scales and the,
it's blue.
You know, I have to be, yeah, it's blue, and I have to be like moist all the time, and like, or I dry out and something bad happens. But to them, they're like, no, I see you as like a normal. And it's like, well, okay.
Well, that's something that I feel like nobody can see you right now. But you read to me as a man.
And I love it.
I mean, like, I think I would, sometimes I'm like, I don't know what other people see. So I'm like, what I see may or may not be like, you know, how other people are perceiving the people in my life. But I do think that that's like generally the interpretation of you by like the average person.
Yeah. I now almost universally pass unless something fruity happens. And then like occasionally someone like a stranger will start using they, them pronouns. And it's like, I'm like, ooh, what tipped them off? But almost always, especially like, I think to cis people, I just read cis because they're moving through the world. Like, why would there be a trans person here right now?
Right.
And it's like,
Yeah.
But I like that. I mean,
yeah. I mean, I think what's coming to mind for me is like the way that, you know, my parents, they're in their almost in their 70s. My mom's in her 70s. My dad is not. And he would be very upset if I said he was in his 70s. So I feel like I have to give this really long explanation.
Yeah.
He's 69 and 3/4. So, you know, they live on the west side of Los Angeles. And what I've noticed is that, like, you know, where you and I live on the east side, like, you see a diverse range of gender presentation.
Yeah.
And I feel like, you know, I've used this metaphor before for other things, but like when I took a painting class in college, you know, you think there's like 6 colors, and then you start the class and you start learning about like this green has a little orange in it, or like has a little purple in it, or like this shadow has some red in it. And then all of a sudden you look at a tree where you're like, it has a brown trunk and green leaves, and it's actually like 75 different colors. And I feel that way about gender, but it's like a thing that you actually have to be exposed to in order to like,
totally
see. And I noticed that like my parents don't see that, because where they live, a mere 8 miles away or whatever, like there's 2 genders almost exclusively.
Yeah, like truly probably just less diversity, less conversations about it. The trees are green and
the trees
orange,
are green,
and it's like that, that's it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. The sky is blue.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Sometimes I'm like, I don't feel like I can, I don't know. I'm like, I want to tell this little story, but I'm afraid that I'm like violating privacy, but I don't think it really matters. I'll just leave it anonymous. I was dating a trans girl, someone we both know. Mm-hmm. And, one time we were out and she used the men's bathroom. And I was like, what are you doing? Like, do you know what you look like? Like,
yes, yes.
You can't go in there, you know? And then I really had to kind of check myself, because I was like, maybe I'm not seeing what other people are seeing. And they might be more aware of what other people are seeing. It's also very possible that they haven't kind of like updated how they see themselves, you know?
Totally.
Like, that's also a thing. But I kind of was like, it was a combination of a bunch of stuff where I was like, what are you doing? And then I was like, well, maybe actually I don't know what other people are seeing.
This exact experience happened, not to be like, you know, the rat king of queer dating in Los Angeles, but the person that you're talking about, their ex, I had that experience with them. And I said, "What? Why are you going into the men's bathroom? That's nuts."
Yeah, why would you
do
that?
Well, that's just like probably the most people see me that way. And I was like, oh man, I do not see you that way at all.
Right.
And I would be really surprised to hear that other people do. But I, you know, if in your experience, that's where you go. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, the really sad part was that when I asked them about it, they were like, well, there were a lot of families in there, in the women's
room. Yeah.
And I had to stop myself from crying. But I also, I don't know, it's different. Like if we go to the bathroom together, I don't know, whatever.
Totally. Anyway. Yeah. In pairs is so different.
Yeah.
When I was growing up, I was like, I was like a butch teenager. And not all the time.
The photos you show me made me. Can you hold that a little farther away from your
face? A little farther.
Like popping a little bit. Thank
too hot,
you.
Too hot.
Yeah, too hot. Hot mic. I don't know. Maybe you were showing me pictures from a period where you were like really trying to.
I think I was showing you college.
Okay.
And in college, I had this year where I really just wanted to be a cis straight woman. It was so important to me.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I just was like, well, maybe I haven't like tried that hard.
Because society is not constantly telling you that that's your only option. You just haven't considered, maybe I'm just a cis straight woman.
Yeah. It hadn't even occurred to me to give it a shot. And I really did. But yeah, no, when I was like a teenager all the time, because I just looked like a prepubescent boy.
Me too.
And yeah. Oh my God. I would get yelled at in the women's restroom constantly. And I was just like, I think supposed to be in here. Like, I'm not, I don't understand why you're upset with me. Yeah. But that's just, you know, little butch life. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. There was a long time in my life where people just like total strangers, a lot of people just assumed that I was a lesbian. And I was like, well, that's funny.
Why would anyone think that?
Yeah, why would anyone think that? I mean, I'm not a lesbian. I don't identify as a lesbian. I think these days I'm feeling a lot more like a fag than a dyke. And I'm really enjoying that for myself. You know, I'm in my like Timothy Chalamet. He's outgrowing me, Timothy.
Yeah, he's leaving the twink flame.
He is.
You have to carry the torch, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's right. He's going to be able to grow a full beard one day and I'll just be the lone twink left behind.
It is weird that he's going to get older and become like an adult man.
I know. I mean, we've seen this, like we watched this happen with, or I'm a little older than you, but I watched this happen with Leo.
Yes. This is a big Leo, I don't want to say problem, but...
I mean, Leo's a problem in a lot of ways, but
yeah.
I hope that Timothy dates people his own age, but Leo did really go from like trans mask twink euphoria to like middle aged dad
very quickly.
Yeah.
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 And it was, he was taking a lot of movies that seemed really stressful. And I feel like he just like immediately aged into the roles.
Yeah.
Like he was like the aviator, got it. And then from then on, I was like, uh-oh.
Yeah, what's going on?
Yeah.
I know. I heard that he, I heard that, this is a silly thing to talk about, but I heard that he thinks farts are really funny. And so he like farts on his co-stars. and that this is why Claire Danes hated him in Romeo and Juliet, because he kept farting on her, and she didn't think it was funny.
That's wild.
I'm of two minds about this because I think farts are really funny, and I also like fart a lot because I have a bunch of digestive issues.
Right.
But, you know, I wouldn't fart on somebody else on
especially if after the work. First time you go, I guess that didn't go so well.
Right. Yeah. I just got to farting territory with the person that I'm dating, and I'm really relieved.
That's huge. Except, I mean, there's a point where you go too far that I've experienced where I'm like, some of these we needed to have in private. Yeah. Like, some of these were just for us. And wow.
Yeah, I should have like pulled down my pants for that so I could leave it behind in the bathroom.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. 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 I don't know. I've just given up. My stomach stuff is like, it's just part of who I am and what the deal is when you sign up for this. And I try to tell people like, sorry, I farted. It might be stinky for a little bit. And if we got to move, that's okay.
If we have to move houses, that's fine. We can go to another city.
Yeah. It's don't cool. go under the covers.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's where I do my best work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I will say my farts are way healthier than they've ever been, which is like a huge deal for me because I used to be truly afraid to go out in public.
That's huge. As long as you know when they're going to happen, that's like the biggest thing for me.
I usually do. I feel like that's a thing with age. Like my dad just is like walking and toots come out of his butt and he's like, oops.
That's so awful. There was like a year of my life where things were uncertain. Like I just, I never knew when it was going to happen. And I could keep it together while I was awake. But as soon as I was asleep, it was crazy.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I was dating this guy. And I just remember there was one night where I think we woke up every like 15 minutes. Like wow. Both of us were awoken.
By your farts.
Mm-hmm.
Is this before you cut out dairy? It must have been, right? Because
Yeah. Yeah. But also, I don't know. There's a lot was going on back then. Yeah.
Like emotionally?
No, just like intestinally. I don't really know. Like, I don't think I was doing anything that different. And yet, chaos in those days. Yeah.
I've been thinking a lot lately about like how grateful I am to be as healthy as I am now. And like, you know, there's like a lot of people around me who, because of like the way that I have to handle my stuff, like it seems like I'm not well, you know, but I'm actually,
it's the thing that keeps you well.
It's the thing that keeps me well. And to know that is such a gift. Okay. Wait, I wanted to go back to something about how you do what you do, because I think I see something in how you're like handling your work, art, creative life that I think is really admirable. And I think a lot of people would really benefit from hearing it. And here's what it is. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Okay. That you've like taken a lot of your work into your own hands. Like you're like, I'm going to put on this event. I'm going to put on this show so that I get to perform and I get to give my friends opportunities to perform. And I did that when I was like in my, I don't know, like mid-20s in New York trying to make theater happen. Like I was putting on events. And for me, it was like, I want to be able, like I need to flush out my resume. And so I'm going to put event planning, organizing, producing, writing, directing, performing on my resume. And I'm just going to host an event essentially so that I can do that. And I feel like there's just a lot of like waiting for opportunities to come or trying to like join other people's stuff, you know, like, would you please have me kind of energy. And like you and I live in Los Angeles, you know, no one's gonna like the idea of being discovered. I feel like is like, I've just put that completely away in the garbage. So I just want to hear about like what that process was like for you.
Oh, yeah. I feel like I've kind of always been like that. Like when I started comedy, I was doing a lot of improv at this theater that was really run by like two people. One of them so toxic, I won't even get into it. I credit him with like most of the positive and negative like parts of myself for sure. Whoa. But
In Chicago?
This was in San Diego.
Oh, okay.
But I feel like one of the things I learned was like, if you want to do something, you just have to like learn how to do it and then execute and you get better over time. But this was like, I mean, there really was one man who like put together the shows, had the venue, you know, learned how to make posters and like learned graphic design, figured out how to like use social media to advertise. And I just was like, oh, okay. Like if I want to do stuff, I can just do it. And waiting for other people to invite me is like, mm-hmm. to me, the worst feeling in the world, because especially in LA, like there are just so many talented people. You're going to be waiting for a really long time and it has nothing to do with you. It's that like the line is long.
Yeah. So, the pool is big.
It's massive. Yeah. It's massive.
Right. I think, you know, it's also a really amazing way to like build community and kind of make a name for yourself within a community to like yeah. be the host, the kind of like person who creates the watering hole, you know, the delta where like all the channels merge. I think it's also, I don't know, it's a lot to take on, but you also get to kind of decide. Yeah, like what, I don't know. I enjoyed your show so much, the one that you put on Trans Day of Remembrance. Like I was like crying, laughing, and it was like from you and your co-host, but like also from the people that you put on
the
line.
We had some really great people.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's such a treat to get to do that show in particular because it feels like a big community event.
Yes.
Like, I mean, I tend to host a lot. It's not like my favorite role. I would so much rather be a guest and show up and do my thing and hang out. But with that show in particular, I really like hosting because it's like I get to select, mm-hmm. I don't know, just anyone I want to come on. And we try to make it like a really specific show. And then it feels like there's a sense of community because everyone's trans and like, yeah, it's such a treat. I love doing it.
I mean, it's such a important, like, I feel like there's a lot of, I don't know. Here's a question. How do you experience imposter syndrome, or like, when does it show up and how do you deal with it?
I don't think that I do.
What?
I know that sounds crazy. I definitely experience, I never feel like I'm an imposter, but I often feel like, oh, I'm like a beginner, but I'm never like worried that I've tricked other people. Like if I'm down on myself, it's because I'm like, I haven't learned everything I have to learn about this yet. But I don't think I have the inverse where I'm like, I think I've tricked people into believing.
Is that what you think imposter syndrome is? That's a really interesting take.
Yeah, like, I feel like the way I've heard it described is, like, I've somehow fooled everyone into thinking that I am a professional or that I'm good at this. But the truth is I'm an imposter and I'm bad.
Oh, interesting.
What's your, like, read of it?
Yeah. I mean, I feel, my imposter syndrome shows up where I'm like, it doesn't feel like I've tricked people. It's just more like, who am I to call myself that? Or like, I don't know what I'm doing.
Yeah. No, I do have that.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. You're like, what? Yeah.
I mean, So like, yeah, because the reason I asked you that was because I was like, you know, I think for a lot of people, there's sort of these like imaginary, like, well, once I get this or once I've done this, then I'll be able to host the events. Then I'll know how to do that. And it's like, no, you actually, you learn how to do it by doing it.
Yeah.
And there's like things where like, obviously you don't want to take that approach, like being a doctor.
Right. You learn by watching.
You learn by doing the surgery. You just do the surgery. You just cut a person open and then you know how to do it. Like, okay, not for that. But like, I think with a lot
performance,
of
performance,
Well, and like if putting on events, you know, like you might put on an event and then realize after the fact, like, okay, I should have done this earlier in the timeline, or like, you know, next time I want to make sure I have 12 of these instead of 6 of these, or like, you know, I learned about marketing, like this worked, this didn't work. But I see it a lot with like, it came up in my educator training this past week, this idea of like, you know, a lot of people often in that program, I see them kind of go like, well, I'm not ready to teach yet. And I'm like, well, when do you think you're going to be ready to teach? Like, you're just going to, you're going to learn something and then you're going to teach it to someone. And then you're going to teach it again and again and again and again.
Right, right.
That's how you learn to do it.
It's just getting reps in.
Like, right. Well, that's what Aaron said too.
100%. Like, you just get started. And, oh, I loved Aaron's episode.
Aw.
Yeah. Anyways, I didn't realize Aaron had worked for One Table. But, okay, whatever.
I didn't know any of that about him.
I know. We're learning.
We're learning. But I also was not surprised that he like worked in fashion briefly. I was like,
that's no, you can tell. He's so got looks.
I know. I know. He's got style, that guy.
But I really think it is just reps and practice. Like, I have this, I don't do it that often anymore because my duo partner, Chris, lives in Chicago still. But we would do, we do a two-man improv show that we like tour around to a bunch of different festivals. And I mean, we've probably done, I don't know, we've done many shows. And just over time, we realized, if you look at my face and you look at Chris's face, there is something about us where just like, by looking at us, we don't inspire confidence. And a lot of the success of an improv set, I think, is the people walk out on stage and you go, okay, I think they're going to be fine. I'm not worried about them.
Mm, and that's not the case. For you,
I don't think our faces don't say good at improv. I don't know
what,
but we figured out that if prior to starting improvising we had like an incredibly tight, funny, scripted intro, people saw that we could execute that, they were like, we're fully on board for whatever improvised thing you guys do for the next 25 minutes. But without that like tight intro, and these are just like the kind of things where like, you know, over years of doing a specific show, you figure out what works and what doesn't. You try different things and you tighten it up. And then you're like, okay, now I know that this thing works and this thing doesn't work. Like if I'm putting together a lineup of a show, it's like at this point, it's kind of intuitive, but I had to try a lot of different versions of it.
Yeah. It's like putting together a mixtape.
Yeah.
You may not know what a mixtape is, Charlie, but a mixtape is something we used to... I'm kidding. I never made a mixtape. I made mix CDs.
Right. Same. Yeah. Same. I've burnt a CD.
Yeah, I've burnt.
People will say I didn't, but I burnt at least 3 in my lifetime.
Okay, I can attest though for our audience that you are very good at improv. I saw your improv group and it blew me away.
Thank you. That was our second show. Oh, I guess that was our third. It started as just a mashup of trans and gender nonconforming people. And then we were like, wait, we're so cute. We should hang out.
You guys
more.
Are so cute and Thank you're you. So talented. I mean, I wanted to see more of the improv. Finn's singing, like just out of the thin air, and like the way that their face like twitch it, that they can like make their face twitch. I don't know. I was like mesmerized.
I am completely under Finn's spell. Whatever is going on there, I'm like,
that
for sure.
Is a magic person. That is a person with some real, and I say this without the derogatory, a fairy. That's a fairy.
Yeah.
Like, a magical
right. You, I say this with no homophobia.
no homophobia whatsoever. Just love and admiration.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some people look like beautiful adult cherubs, and that.
Yes, and that's. Yeah. That is one.
That's
of
one
them.
Of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Wait. Oh, you know, it's interesting to hear you talk about this because I feel like my process has been really similar for teaching, where like I at the very beginning of the pandemic when I started teaching, I was trying to teach a 75-minute class where I covered Planned Parenthood's fries, my yes to no spectrum, and the wheel of consent, which now I teach over the course of like 4 2-hour long sessions, you know? And also I was teaching them in the reverse. So I was starting with like the massive one, the wheel of consent, and then going to the yes to no spectrum and then going to fries. And I kept having these sort of like aha moments of like, oh, it should be in the reverse so that we're starting small and building up to big. That was a big learning moment. Then spreading it out into three separate classes. And like now I'm like, I look back and I'm like, what were you doing? Like, that's insane to try to cram that all in. But that was all part of the process. And then also like learning, you know, how the order in which to teach things on a more minute level. And then also like how the words to use, you know, what is confusing to what routinely confuses people and what routinely makes sense to people, and, you know, learning to anticipate reactions and where to like bring in personal stories and where to try to make people laugh and disarm them and things like that. Like, I've been doing this for long enough that I have thought of like, oh, this almost feels like what I've come to understand it's like to like build a stand-up set.
Completely. And like having, instead of having a very one-note class,
yeah,
you bring in those other elements and it gives everyone a little break. And then it's like, oh, okay. Now we can go back to this like really hard part of this topic or, yeah.
Right.
I think anticipating people's questions, no matter what you do, is like one of the best skills that you can have.
Totally, totally. I have been able to do that more and more and more, and it's very exciting when I'm able to do that. And another skill I think is like learning what is like behind the question. Like, and often in what I'm teaching, it's a lot of like fear, you know, like fear of doing something wrong or attempts at reading someone else's mind. Like a lot of the questions that I get come, like my response to them is like, you know, it's a lot about like, well, how do you handle it if someone else, blah, 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 or like, how do you help other people figure out whatever? And I'm all like, most of my answers have something to do with like, start with yourself, start with yourself, start with yourself.
Totally. Oh yeah. And just accept that you are really not like the facilitator for other people in the way that you would like to be.
That's right. That's right. Like you,
I always wish I could be that, but it's not real.
Oh my God. I mean, how you can burn yourself out. You know, I was talking to my friend about this yesterday, my friend Hannah, who was also on the show, about how like I used to date people. I used to find myself in like rather codependent relationships where I was the caretaker and they, you know, I dated a lot of people with like severe substance abuse issues and really severe mental health issues. You're smiling.
I'm smiling.
Do you want to tell people why you're smiling?
I'm smiling because you're like, you know, I used to have these kinds of relationships and I'm like, oh, and now you found one as a friend.
Well,
that's so beautiful.
Yeah, but can I
oh say, yeah,
you're sober.
Yeah, as often as I can be.
For a good 5 minutes a day.
No, yeah, okay. I try to be.
I'm joking. But no, I mean, you know, I it's funny, there was a tipping point where like at a certain point, instead of having a lot of friends who were like actively using substances in really self-harmful ways, I found myself making friends with a lot of people in 12-step programs
totally.
And recovery. And I was like, oh, it's like the same people. And I also have had to really look at like, I'm so lucky that all my friends are still alive.
Oh, huge. It's awesome.
Oh yeah. My God.
And there will be an age, kind of regardless of why, where that's not true for us. And like
totally.
That, it sounds devastating.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there really are some people in my life or like people I've dated in the past who like, I'm like, it's amazing that you didn't die.
Totally. Yeah.
Anyway, I used to find myself in a lot of relationships, whether it was like my roommates had substance abuse issues, my partners had substance abuse issues, and like severe mental health issues. Those often obviously go hand in hand. And I was really, I don't know, I think I had a lot of guilt around like having whether it was like the very privileged upbringing that I had, or like that I, you know, I had work that was sustaining me, or that I had, you know, I thought I had like pretty stable mental health, which I didn't always. I thought I was very healthy, which also I was not. But, you know, so I was like over giving and giving and giving. And that allowed me to like not look at my own shit. So there, you know, there's a very symbiotic relationship there where like, I don't want to look at the stuff that I have to tend to in me. So I'm just going to look for people with enough problems that I can just pour what little I have into them. And what I was talking to my friend Hannah about yesterday was how drastically that has changed as I've learned to take care of myself. I'm finding myself dating people and in relationships with people who are way better at taking care of me.
And totally.
Like, interestingly, it's like I actually need less of that because I'm taking very good care of myself now. But that makes it all that much nicer to like receive that kind of care and support from people who care about me. Where it's like I'm getting more care now that I need less because I know how to take care of myself.
Completely. Because now you value that.
Yes.
And then when other people, I also think it's like, it's so much easier to identify. Once you're caring for yourself, you're like, oh, that thing is also, this person is caring for me. And I'm actually able to receive it because now I know how to do it. And
I know what it feels like and that I like it and that I deserve it.
Yeah. Like now it matters to you.
Right.
Because maybe for many years you were just like,
I don't know.
Why would we be focused on me?
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I mean, I'm finding myself dating a caretaker, like a very, very, someone who's very much a caretaker for probably the first time in my life. And I'm like, what the fuck is this? Like, what is this? I've never had this before. And there's like moments where I'm uncomfortable and then
totally.
I have to be like, you deserve this, Mia, you know, like at midnight when he's like, give me 20 minutes, I'll make you carbonara. And I'm like, you don't have to do that.
You're like, no, go to bed and I'll be hungry all night. That's what it should be.
Right.
Yeah, completely.
Yeah. But I don't know. There's also a way that like, I love caretaking. It's such a wonderful experience for me to get to give that to someone. And like, how silly of me to like not let anyone give that to me.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And if you can't receive it, it's like, then it's all one directional. And who's, you know, pouring into your cup? And what are we doing here?
Right. You know, do you know what the Wheel of Consent is?
Mm-mm.
Okay. I'll show it to you next time we hang out. But it's a framework and like it's an XY axis diagram that helps you determine who something is for. So it's like the basic idea without like a diagram is like, you can do something to someone for them.
Mm.
And so obviously you can be the recipient of that.
Right.
But you can also do something to someone for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And you can also, of course, be the recipient of that. So, so like, for example, you know, you can think about like touching someone's hair to make them feel good, you know, like head scratchies or whatever. And then you can think about like touching someone's hair because it's nice to play with.
Yeah.
Like those are two different things. One is for you and one is for me. And both are great. But like consent, you know, people have to like agree to like which role that they're in.
Yeah.
So one of the things, Betty Martin came up with this framework, and one of the things that she says is like, you get better at giving when you learn to receive.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I would argue if you're just giving, like you guys aren't really in relationship with each other, you know?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's so hard. I feel like a lot of people I know are in the camp of like really comfortable with giving,
yeah,
really struggle to receive. But I mean, you just have to be, it's vulnerable to receive something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So one of the things that she talks about as like the kind of way, or my interpretation of this is like one of the ways to learn to receive, especially if you're someone who like feels like you don't deserve it or you feel guilty or you're concerned with like, oh, I have to reciprocate. What she talks about is gratitude, you know, and I think about like with sex in particular, right? Like if someone is doing something to me, like if someone's going down on me and I'm preoccupied with like, well, geez, like it's been 20 minutes and like, are you okay? And like,
am I taking too long? Totally.
Yeah. Right. It's just to like, but you know, there has to be trust there. Right. And it has to be in a dynamic where you're not having to read someone's mind so that you can trust that they're giving this to you as a gift. That's what they want to be doing.
Yeah.
Or you can also be, I mean, that's a great example too of you can go down on someone for them and you can go down on someone for you. Like, it's one of my favorite things to do is to like go down on someone just because like that's what I like, I'm going to explore and play.
Totally.
And then obviously I want you to tell me if like I'm doing something that hurts or like doesn't feel good or whatever. Yeah. But like mostly I just want to like have a good time and like make some art down here and like you get to just sort of see what that's like for you.
Yeah.
Within reason. But you know, also like the same activity can like change whether it's for you or for me, like moment to moment or like whatever. But yeah, that, you know, if you're worried like, oh, it's been a long time or blah, 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 like to just be like gratitude, like, thank you. Oh my gosh, thank you for doing this for me.
Completely. Well, and people I think are so much more comfortable if it's like, okay, I'm going down on you and it's for me. It's like, oh, great, then have a ball.
Yeah, have a ball.
But as soon as maybe it's pressure to, they feel that it's like pressure to have a good time or to receive in like a way that's like quick or whatever. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I think people are so much more comfortable with like somebody else is doing this for them and I am a part of it. Yeah.
Right. But so that's an interesting, like, I agree with you. And yet it's like, that quadrant of this diagram is like where I think most people struggle. It's called the taking quadrant, which like that word can have some negative connotations, but like within the circle, there's like a, you know, a limit where it's like inside is consensual and then outside is not.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so like, you know, so long as it's very clear, like I want to like, can I explore your body? You know, like, please tell me if you don't like anything, but like for the most part, I just want to go to town. Like that is, I so enjoy when someone wants to do that to me.
Totally.
Like, please do whatever, you know, like I'm your oyster.
Yeah. And it feels so nice to be enjoyed.
Yes.
Right. I mean,
yes. Right. But I think a lot of people do struggle. And I mean, I'm also speaking like for myself that sometimes it does feel like that, like it feels selfish. Like there's like a fear that it's selfish. I think there's something about going down on someone where that isn't really there. Like, mm-hmm. Because it can feel kind of once, you know, like I'm
totally,
you know what I mean? But like,
but for other things,
yeah,
to me, like, and I don't always feel this way. Like it's definitely challenging sometimes, but I like, I'm so comfortable with there being moments of selfishness and then trading off.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Like a lot of things I want to do are really just for me. And I've gotten to a place where I'm like, I'm completely happy to ask for that. And next we'll swap or next time it's all you. And you don't want it to become like a point system where it's like, well, Last time it was just XYZ. But as long as there's some like give and take, I think that's so, it's so fun. Because there's a lot of stuff that's just, you know, it's you're not going to align on everything you want, but.
Right. And then, you know, the other person then can be like, that might not be like my genuine desire, but like, I love that you want to do that. And you
completely.
Yeah.
Completely.
Like I want to nuzzle someone's armpit. You don't have to enjoy me. You know, you don't have to be like, oh my God, I love when you nuzzle my armpit. So long as you're like, yeah, you can, you know, go for it.
Fine. Get in there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I think that happens a lot with kink, you know, it's like, I don't care if you yeah, like if you want to worship my feet, like, okay,
yeah,
go ahead, you know, like fun for me to watch you enjoy that, but I'm not really getting like sexual pleasure out, but that's fine.
Right.
Okay. So then question for you, we're getting personal. How good are you at asking people to do stuff to you for you?
Oh, to me for me. Ooh. I'm okay. I'm getting better. Like, I would say now I'm good, but I don't think that's always been true.
Same.
Yeah. I think, I mean, the biggest change happened when I got sober and then immediately physically transitioned, because I was like, I noticed that once I was sober, it was unbearable.
Turns out.
I thought, I've got this totally locked in, and all of a sudden I have to feel all my emotions, and now I absolutely have to transition. But another thing that went with that was being super real about like sexual acts that actually caused me a great amount of dysphoria that mm-hmm. I had just been, I think I was under the impression that I liked them because I really enjoyed how much the other person liked
uh-huh.
them.
Uh-huh.
And it took a really long time for me to be like, oh, no, there's like an entire category of things that I'm doing that are maybe like total red light no's. And yeah. there's this whole new category of like yellow light for them things that I'm excited by. And then vice versa, like how do I ask for people for what I actually want for
yeah.
me?
Yeah.
That one took like, I think, the longest to come. But now I'm yeah. like, you know, getting good. Love doing it. Know yeah. what I want. That's like, it's really nice to know what you want.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. And it's, I try to remind myself of like how amazing it is when someone else can ask me for what they want. And it's like really specific and really clear.
Yes.
And then I get to be like, yes, I can do that for you, you yeah. know? And because I think there's like, certain things that I've noticed are harder for me to ask for. And it's like probably things that are in normative culture, like taboo or whatever.
Totally.
Or not even taboo, but like that people think are weird or gross or, you know, whatever. I like butts. That's where I'm, what I'm getting.
You
at
like butts.
That. I like butts. Yeah. I like butts. But yeah, like there's like something about asking for things that have that sort of stigma around them that like feels extra vulnerable.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think,
feel that a lot. Or, yeah. I mean, a lot of it's internal, like, it's not really coming from my partner being, like...
No.
I don't have a lot of experience of people being, like, what?
Ew.
That's so nuts. But yeah. it's like, internal shame of, like, this thing I'm asking for, I think a lot of people would have something negative to say about it.
Right, but, like, nobody that I'm dating. I'm dating weirdos yeah. and... I'm
dating little sick weirds. Freaks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone I'm dating is a weirdo.
Yeah.
That's why I'm dating them. And that's why they're dating me. Like, you know, I found myself at a party this last weekend. My dear friend Evan, who I've known for like over 10 years, we worked together at a restaurant in the Gramercy Park Hotel. It was a very uptight, fancy restaurant. And he's now in finance. Which I say disparagingly. It's not disparaging. He does really wonderful work, actually. I really admire what he does. And but you know, I'm like his only friend like me, you know, like I
yeah.
showed up to this party, like you know, we were talking about this the other day, like, or we were sort of talking about something adjacent to it, not being Jewish enough, but like mm-hmm. I frequently in queer community feel not queer enough, which is like
interesting.
Silly.
Yeah.
It's silly. But then I go to a party like Evan's and I'm like, I am visibly queer here. Like I am like
yeah.
obviously queer. And you know, whether or not anybody knows in what way or like what that means, like doesn't matter. But you know, that's a place where people are like, that's a lesbian.
Right. And now all of a sudden you're in this role that is so opposite to how you normally feel yes. about yourself.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I still like, you know, I don't know. It's funny. Like I was watching Gossip Girl for a while, and I often have these moments of being like, oh, that those are cis women. This is not that.
This is not cis women.
No one is looking completely at me thinking. But then there are people who, you know, like I think I maybe talked to you about this a little bit. Like I definitely had like a, really it was like a week maybe of like, oh no, I'm going to be in like a straight passing relationship. Like what a nightmare. And it's like more about, even though we had a really cute conversation where he was like, I don't think anyone would think that we're straight people. And I was like, well, my mom's friends would think that we're, you know, like there's like those people. Yeah. But like, they don't know. Anyway. Yeah. Brief crisis. Not because I care if people think I don't care. If people think I'm straight, they're dumb. But more because if they're thinking that I'm straight, they see me as a woman. And that is disorienting for me.
Yeah. I hate that. I mean, it's like what you said about the trees earlier, but it's like if you, if in your world there are gay people and straight people,
right,
then it feels uncomfortable to go in the straight box.
I loved the joke in your song at your event where you were like, if you don't think a straight relationship,
if you think a straight relationship can't be gay,
you're probably cis.
Yeah. I don't think I've ever had a straight relationship except for that one in college.
Yeah.
And even that, a little gay. Wait,
I said me neither, but that's not really true. I definitely, like, there was a period in my 20s where I knew I was queer. Like, I never thought I was straight, but I kind of was like, well, I keep dating men. Like, I just keep dating men. So, like, I guess that's me. And then, you know, some of those relationships, now I'm like, those were queer relationships.
Completely.
And then there are other relationships that I was trying to fit into. And I'm like, oh, those were straight men.
Yes. You know,
whereas like these other relationships, I really think that some of those people who identify as men are like non-binary or trans femme. And then other ones of them are just queer. You know, they're queer. And I'm queer. Like, I'm a queer person. So I was never in a straight relationship. I was I was attempting to be.
Right. And you thought you were showing up that way. And probably not. And probably a big part of why it didn't work is that disconnect. Yeah. Like, I think there's so many relationships where, if I zoom out, like, the real core of the problem is, like, they dated a lot of women. And not maybe not exclusively. But I was showing up and being like, why am I your girlfriend and not your boyfriend? Like, the way you treat me is really foreign to me, and I don't want to do it, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is a common thing. When I was in high school, I remember saying, I think I'm a gay boy. And like not understanding what that meant, because I at the time like didn't really know that trans men existed.
Totally.
Because I knew that, you know, trans women have always been, for better and for worse, in the media.
Mm-hmm.
You know, often portrayed really horribly, very disparagingly. But
there weren't really trans men. Yeah.
No.
Yeah. Or yeah. I mean, non-binary people. It was a very small thing.
Because the umbrella of woman encompassed a lot more, like, like now we just call them different genders, but like you used to, there were like butch women and there were like tomboys and there were, you know, whatever. Like, and then also for a lot of girls, like being one of the boys, quote unquote, or like, you know, that's like a positive thing.
Yeah.
And so there's not this same sense of like transgressiveness that leads you to be like, well, I have to like differentiate myself.
Yeah. But it's so rewarded to be one of the boys if you're showing up in a very cisgender way.
Right.
Totally.
Right. Yeah. Not if you look like a dyke.
No. Did you ever read Lou Sullivan's Diaries?
No, but
I can't recommend it enough, Mia.
I should do that.
It totally changed my life. But it's like fascinating to watch someone so long before the internet, like slowly through years of building community, piece together. I can't imagine, without someone introducing the idea that this is possible, realizing that you are both a man and a gay man.
Yes, right.
But you watch them, you watch him walk through it, and it's like, it's so cool.
Yeah, I mean, there's like so much in there. I know that there's like cultures where it's like better to be trans than gay because then at least you're straight.
Yep. Fascinating.
What? Yeah. Okay, I'm trying to, I feel like we're, you know, we've been talking for a while and I just want to, I'm trying to think if there are
I know
any,
we've
like,
done everything.
I know, but are there any like loose ends or like things that you wanted to say that you didn't say or things that we left open?
I don't think so. I mean, yeah.
Okay. Well, then where can people find you and anything you want to plug?
Where can people find me? I'm all over the internet at Non-Binary Cowboy. And that's like the only sentence I still say in the most Chicago accent that I really don't know. Like, I think
what
it's
was
left
the accent?
Me.
Wait, do it again.
When I say cowboy, non-binary cowboy is like cowboy? So... It's something about, there's like kind of an A and the O.
Uh-huh.
I haven't lived there for a long time. I don't really know. Anyways. Yeah, I'm online, you might say. And if you live in LA, I do a show that travels around called Gentleman's Club. It's an all trans show. And I think that's the bulk of where I'm around. I walk around and you could see me outside as well.
Yeah, both of us.
Oh,
and walk around enough,
you'll see us.
Probably see us.
I was going to say at Parsha Class, which you plugged.
At Parsha Class, at Jewel, at various queer events, sometimes places where you can get tattoos.
Mm-hmm.
And
I'm at restaurants all the time.
Yeah, I am at restaurants. I drink coffee in public a lot. But wherever the gays go, is probably where you'll find me, so long as dogs are allowed.
That's hugely
most
true about you.
Yeah, and there's a large overlap there, I'd say.
Man, you'd love AA meetings. People are bringing the craziest dogs in there. You would not believe.
I cannot some of them, imagine. I what?
Some of the dogs, I'm like, those are at-home dogs.
Oh.
You know?
Yeah.
You can't imagine.
I was going to say, I feel like if I went to any AA meeting on the east side of Los Angeles, I would run into someone I know.
Oh,
I run into people I know constantly. And I feel like the one place that I'm not going where like my friends are probably most concentrated is AA.
Yes. Yes. It's everyone you know. And it's people you didn't know were sober.
Mm-hmm.
And, the other day I was at a meeting and there was this really young kid there who was sitting next to me and they leaned over and they said, "You're on TikTok, right?" And I was like, "Yeah." And I had a moment where I was like, that was so cool. I got recognized. And then I was like, I got recognized at an AA meeting.
At an AA meeting. Yeah.
This is not the same.
I mean, you did just tell everybody that you're in AA, which is.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. So if they want to find you, they'll find you. That's a really funny thing that I didn't know that we had in common, like when we first met, just that we're like both mildly internet famous.
Yeah.
And like,
but for
what,
very different,
for very
like
different.
Everyone I know follows you.
Yeah. That makes sense to me.
Yeah.
But I've also seen your stuff like on my friend, you know, like my friends reshare your stuff and
yeah. But and vice versa.
What's going on with your microphone?
Oh,
it's making weird sounds.
I'm twiddling something. I'm sorry.
Stop.
I was twiddling. Yeah.
How dare you twiddle? Yeah. Anyway, I don't know. The idea, the like, I've been recognized now. Like someone came up to me at Temple at Nefesh who was like, "You came up on my Instagram feed," but it was because of when Gigi Hadid reshared my post about Israel.
Gigi. Oh my gosh.
Wait, do
I didn't
you
know
about that? Oh,
no.
Oh. Oh, I made a post like in the week after October 7th that said what I thought was the most obvious, innocuous possible thing. It said, "There's nothing Jewish about what Israel is doing in Gaza,
mm-hmm.
Critiquing Israel's actions is not anti-Semitic, and being pro-Palestinian is not the same as being pro-Hamas. Like,
yeah, all I think incredibly. What I would assume are non-controversial statements.
I would
and
also
yet,
assume. And yet, oh, you are in for a ride. Mm-hmm. I don't go on Instagram on Shabbat. So I posted this on a Friday, I think, and then didn't go online. And then on Sunday, like, opened Instagram, and this post had 80,000 likes. And because I didn't want to engage with fucking stupid people, I didn't even go look at like who was resharing it, because I was like, I don't want the commentary, I don't want the hate, I don't want to know. Normally I look, but like this one I was like, ugh.
Right.
So on Monday I was kind of like, whoa, like what's going on? Like someone must have reshared this who has like a large following. On Monday, I got a phone call from my friend Minachi, and she was like, hey, do you know that Gigi Hadid reshared your post, and then the Israeli government's Instagram reshared it, coming for her? And I was like, what are you talking about? No, I did not know that. And then I go look, and I look at the reshares, and people are like, I'm with Gigi, like da-da-da-da. And then wow. I start getting all these Google alerts that like I was in Rolling Stone, I was in Variety, I was in Deadline, I was in like, you know, The Cut, like all these. And then Minachi started sending me videos from TikTok of people talking about this and my
yes,
and
it's Gigi. In the background and they're it's like the, green yes, screened over it. Yeah.
Yes. With my watermark and everything. And then they were like, and then the Israeli government posted this and you know, and then people started critiquing how like, they were like, the Israeli government is more preoccupied with like arguing with models than like blah, 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 you know?
Yeah. The Israeli government is the only government I'm aware of that has tweets promoted on my fucking timeline. Oh, and I live God. In the, I'm like, why am I, oh. I have them blocked because I'm just like, look. You yeah. spent money to get an ad to me, an American. That's yeah. pretty interesting.
Yeah. Okay, but then it gets
awful.
Weirder. So
it's already so weird. Mia.
It's so weird. I know. So then I was like, do I go outside? Like, do people know where I am? Like, am I safe here? Do I have to go stay with my parents? Or like, you know, I walked outside and like a van drove by and I was like, oh my God, are there people going to come grab me and put me in this van? I got really, really paranoid. And then my phone started glitching out. And my friend told me that her friend, like I said, this is what's going on my phone. And she was like, my friend who's like a tech person said, that's Pegasus. That's the like Israeli spyware. So I turned my phone off. I ended up like spending a whole day at Apple trying to get a new phone. I installed like extra security at my apartment. I mean, it was crazy. It was so terrifying. It felt so violating.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And then, and you know, somehow I was like, how did I get involved? Like, why
right.
am I now?
By making what you feel are pretty innocuous statements. I think,
reasonable.
Yeah.
And they called it anti-Semitic. The Israeli government's
right.
Shrisher said this post is anti-Semitic.
They love that one.
They love it.
It's so effective, I think, because it's so painful.
Yeah.
The rationale of it, I mean, it's a complete shutdown of any conversation when it becomes you're a self-hating Jew
right.
and you're anti-Semitic and you don't love your own people. And it's like, wow, that couldn't be further from the truth. You know, you're trying to uphold Jewish values and
right,
yeah.
Right.
But it's so wild that an entire government would have your tweet and be
spying on me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking about this with a friend the other day that like the way that Israel has managed to conflate any critique of the government with anti-Semitism is such a surefire way to guarantee generations of future anti-Semitism, and it's creating this situation in which people, a lot of people now think and are acting in such a way that they, that, that they think that the way to critique Israel is by being anti-Semitic.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's furthering anti-Semitism, you know, like the whole ability, the way that they've conflated, critique of the government with anti-Semitism is leading to more anti-Semitism. It's like, well, okay, then that's what we'll do, you know?
Yeah.
And I also was thinking about how, like, the, you know, Jews didn't used to be considered white, and, like, now there are obviously not, there are Jews who are not white, but, like, Jews have successfully kind of assimilated, and I have a lot to say on that, at least in this country.
Yeah.
And, like, we are white, you know, like, I benefit from white privilege, I'm perceived as white, blah, blah, blah. But the result of that is that they've created this kind of, like, racism against white people, quote, yeah. I'm using quotes, and calling it anti-Semitism. And so, like, anti-Semitism has, like, an accusation of anti-Semitism holds so much more water than being, like, that's racist for anyone else who's not white. Because Israel has succeeded in convincing people that, like, the worst kind of race, it's bad to be racist against white people.
Yeah.
It's like, it's, yeah, anyway.
Yeah. I mean, from top to bottom, kind of a failure of a project.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It
and also, to me, it's so frustrating because it's like, we were just talking about this, but it's like, you know, the flag has the Star of David on it.
Right.
So wearing that proudly feels very Zionist, and that's very frustrating. We have all these prayers where we say, you know, Israel.
Yeah.
And if you're a non-Jewish person and you're seeing those and you don't understand the context, it really looks like Jews in America are praying to Israel rather than to praying to the concept of Israel, us all being, you know, a part of that.
And Israel literally means, like, those who wrestle with God.
Right. And right. It's just like, yeah.
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 I know the Jewish star thing is really complicated. Like, my Jewish star that I've been wearing lately is an heirloom from my grandmother who passed away when my dad was 10. So I never met her. And it's, like, very, very precious to me, but it's, like, pretty gaudy. It's, like, pretty big. And yeah. I worry, you know, whenever people are like, nice necklace, I'm like, uh-huh. Like,
yeah.
I don't.
And,
like,
and in what way?
Yeah,
and in
yeah.
What way what do you find it nice?
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to tell the story about running the marathon or no?
Sure. Yeah.
Let's
okay.
End with that. End
yeah.
With that.
That sounds great. I was on my way to run the LA marathon. And I had my big old Star David out slapping around in the wind as I was walking up to Dodger Stadium. And I ran into this guy who, first of all, he had like a full jersey with his name on it. Like this guy does marathons.
Wow.
He flew in from Miami and he had like tzitzit on his, like under his shirt. And he was wearing a kippah and he had this sign that said tefillin on board. And he ran into me and he was like so excited to see, you know, another Jewish guy coming up to run the marathon. And he was like, we should run together. And this is a time where you really have to feel out the vibe is like, where are we on Israel? What's going on? Luckily for me, he runs almost twice as fast as I do. So we did not have to run together, but it was, I mean, a solid like 15-minute walk to the stadium where we're just like talking about our own personal theology and his keeps coming back to Israel and why it's so important. By the time we got there, I was like, oh, thank goodness this is over. And, you know, we wrapped to fill in together. It was really special. The sun was rising. It was great. And then
part of the reason worth mentioning, part of the reason why it's really special is because only men do it.
Yes. Oh, I mean, I could go into a whole, my whole experience of being Bar mitzvah is like just relied on passing.
Right.
Which to me was really affirming to have it not be, you know, a progressive synagogue, but instead was like a confirmation that I'm seen as a man. It was a big deal to me. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. Really special. But, really special. But yeah. And then we parted ways and he went on to run the marathon so fast.
Wow. Good for
and,
him.
And yeah, we need more Jewish athletes.
Underrepresented.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is it about us? Why aren't we?
We're just it's our bodies.
It. Yeah, we're
not to be racist, but it's our bodies
not
and how they
work. Not to be racist, but yes, it's the inbreeding and that we all have bad, fragile tummies.
We don't have height. Like, which, heights, yeah, a lot of little. Sports take height. Yeah.
Yeah, we're not known for our brawn.
No. I really wish, yeah. How cool would it be if all Jews were, like, jacked for no reason?
You know, my dad is 6'4", and he's all Jew.
That's and wild. I actually, know. I take that back. I do know some incredibly tall Jews.
But he's not an athlete. Oh, my God.
No.
He's
like, no, the tall ones are, no.
Yeah, no.
They're, like, writers, and you're like, okay.
Yep, yep. Journalism, joint journalism and law graduate degree with a history BA, like, you know, nerd.
Wow.
Nerd town. Wears glasses. Like,
yeah. Yeah. You gotta wear glasses.
Me, like me, yeah. Not an athlete. Okay, Charlie.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for being here. We covered everything.
Everything.
Absolutely everything.
You thought we were done. We said, Israel, it's time. Let's go.
Can't leave that stone unturned.
No.
Oops. Okay. Thanks.
Hey, thanks.
Hey, thanks.
Bye. Thanks.